Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And today we have a very special guest. All of our guests are special, but particularly special today, we have Joe Free, who is a CPA, and he's the author of a book called Debunked? So with that, welcome, Joe. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So let's tell everybody about who you are. Where do you live? And how did you get into this election business?
I was watching with great interest the Cyber Ninja audit of Maricopa County. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, no reason to write a book because everybody's going to know there's a problem when this is done. After all, they were reporting right during the audit that they stopped matching signatures. Those were employees of Maricopa County that told that to, I think his name was Ken Bennett, if I remember. Mm-hmm. And so I thought this is going to be interesting.
So they told Ken Bennett, the workers told him that they stopped matching signatures during the election.
So well, when during the processing of the, so that would be probably before and after, depending on when those came in.
So I just want to clarify that you're watching the audit and learning that this required signature matching had been stopped.
Stopped so completely that they even said they were taking blanks and running them through.
And they were taking blank envelopes with no signature and going ahead and processing that ballot, right?
Yes, and I think that's very interesting because the excuse they gave was they got so busy that they started running. But, you know, it doesn't take any time to reject a blank. I mean, it might take time to say, well, does this signature match the records, you know, the registration records? That could take time, but it doesn't take any time to reject a blank. It makes me think that there was more to it than just saving time. So anyway, as you know, the mainstream press just treated this whole thing like a joke. Oh, Biden picked up an extra 90 votes or whatever it was, like it's a counting exercise. And that's when I sort of said, no, somebody from an audit perspective. And that's how I'm not an attorney. I know you're an election expert. I'm an accountant. I'm an auditor. And I wanted to give that perspective. And it's very different in a way. You know, in fact, I should be questioning you because there's so much I could learn. But one of the things that strikes me is that we might reject an election if there was massive fraud, or we might reject the certification if there was a massive irregularity, such as a power outage. But I think there's a third reason that people sort of overlook, and that is, to me, as an auditor, reject the election certification if there's absolutely no internal controls and nobody takes it beyond that. And that's what they're missing. That is not acceptable in audits. If we go into a business and the records are a disaster, one of two things happens. If the documents are not even available, we just walk out, no certification possible. We don't try to guess or estimate or say, well, they've got to have their financial statement, so we'll just put something together. We don't do that. It's just the end of it. Now, what the exception might be that sometimes if the original documentation is available, you might do a massive testing of transactions. So you would take, for example, in a business, you might take 2,000 customers and actually contact them through email or mail or telephone to say, did you really buy this? How much did you spend? You get all that documentation. The same thing with the vendors. You would do that. But in the case of these elections I'm sure you're aware of this, that in Pennsylvania and Michigan, they stopped the signature testing completely.
Well, in Pennsylvania, they never started it because Secretary of State told all the counties in September, sent a letter saying, oh, you know, that statute that requires signature matching. Well, because of COVID, we're just not going to do that. I didn't know that COVID caused people not to be able to write their names, but.
Right. And they almost didn't start in, really didn't start in Michigan completely. The only reason they're slightly different is in Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, the Secretary of State, said, told her workers, presume the signatures match. It wasn't 100% instruction, but it, unless there was extraordinary situations, you were to presume they match. So she did that right at the beginning, right after mailing, by the way, 7.7 million ballot applications out. Now think about Michigan. This one really gets me because Michigan requires no ID. None of the six swing states I looked at required ID when you mail in your ballot. But Michigan also didn't require it, and some of the others didn't require it when you got the applicant, when you mailed in the application for the ballot. So you mail in an application for a ballot without an ID, it comes back and you mail it in without an ID, and you know that there's no signature matching. So if you're a ballot harvester, you see one of those extra, an extra 4.4 million not used. Okay, she mails out 7.7 million, 3.3 million are used. That means 4.4 million are floating everywhere. Grab a few of those. If it says Mary Smith on the top, sign Mary Smith. Don't worry about the signature. It's going to be accepted.
What I saw in 2020, and I'd be curious to know, did you, when you wrote your book, did you go state by state and look into each of those states where there was there were controversies surrounding the election?
Oh, yeah. Well, the six swing states. I limited myself to Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
Okay. Talk about how you went about gathering information and evidence about for your book.
Okay. Well, first of all, when I made the decision to go with the book, the first thing I did was grab everything I could because it was disappearing. I mean, mm-hmm. It was crazy. And even now, you can go to some of the links in my book. I'm afraid to say they're dead now. And then I went I covered, the book is sort of in two parts, you might say. It doesn't say that, but there's the comprehensive overview of everything, whether I end up agreeing with it or not. Mm-hmm. But then there's the inner part, which is in the middle, there's those six swing states. And in those six swing states, at the end of each one, I asked the same question. Was the certification premature? I don't say if it was invalid, because I think some of those could have been when there's, we were talking about how you may not have enough data to certify something, but sometimes you can take the next step, which is to beat those transactions to death to get the data. Unfortunately, they never did. It was all, you know, there's the problem of that darn Constitution, because these deadlines and, everybody's cutting their sort of, and then January 6th became the next deadline in effect, where you couldn't even talk about the subject at that point. So, but that's how I went about doing it. And in the middle, you'll find those. And I do make I think I support my opinion in each case. And I ended up opining that all six were premature. They shouldn't have been certified. In some cases, it's not even, like Arizona, it's not even close. I mean, there's three or four different reasons that each on its own would preclude a proper certification.
And what are some of the things that you looked at? And I know you looked at the signature matching in Arizona. Yeah. What else did you look at in Arizona?
Well, okay, the signature matching, Dr. Shiva Ayaduri, you probably know that name. He did the definitive signature test with a panel of six people, three of whom were document examiners, asked them to, selected 499 representative signatures of Maricopa County mail-in ballots. Right. And he asked them to compare those 499, each of the six, compare the 499 to the registration signatures. And an astonishing 12%. In the unanimous opinion of all six, not 5-1, not 4-2, but 6-0, said these 60, which is 12% of that sample, do not match. Now, that implies there could be as many as 204,000 bad ballots in an election decided by 10,004. In other words, 20 times Biden's winning margin. And if you assume, in other words, that 90%, they made a mistake on 90%, they still have 20,000 in an election of 10,400, about 2-1. It shouldn't have been certified. But here's another one. You said, what other ones? I can give you two or three more. The overseas military vote, very important. That gave 8,000 of the 10,400 that Biden won by, 8,000 came from just from that. And it's very suspicious. I mean, beyond almost to the point of being, I hate to use the word proof, but it's so close to it. This Maricopa County was decided fairly evenly. It was 49% Trump, just about, and 51% Biden. What do you think the military, overseas military was, without any documentation? It was 5% for Trump, 95% for Joe Biden. And no, and I'm sure your audience knows what chain of custody is, what basically a documentation of how each ballot or other document got from point A to point B to point C. You have to have that. They didn't have it. So you don't really know where these came from.
Well, you know, the other thing about that I've learned, because I saw the same thing in Georgia. And what I've always made the mistake, I've always said just what you say, the overseas military ballots. But guess what? In 2020, 63% of the UOCAVA vote, which is the Uniformed Overseas Citizens Voting Act, 63% of the UOCAVA vote was non-military.
Yeah.
So one of the things that has happened is that the military voting has decreased, and there's been a bigger push for supposedly citizens overseas casting those ballots. But now we're finding out that there's no requirement that a person who lives overseas has to prove citizenship in the United States in order to cast a ballot in the United States. I think a ballot should be treated like as though it's currency. I'm old enough to remember, and I think you probably are too, remember when we used to get paper airplane tickets?
Yeah.
And once those tickets were issued, you were told that's like currency. You lose that ticket, anybody else could pick it up and use it.
Yeah.
And it was like it was money. And so you would guard that ticket with your life because you just paid all this money for it. And if you lost it, someone else could use it. Now, that's not true anymore, but it was at that time. I think ballots should be treated like that, like currency. It's the most valuable currency of our republic. And yet we have all these ballots that float around.
Cleta, here's another aspect to that. In the Maricopa County audit, what they found was, contrary to what their rules were, I don't know if it was administrative or regulatory, they used 10 different types of paper for those ballots. Now, imagine a $10 bill, and it could be on this paper, it could be on this paper, 10 different types of paper. Who would accept that? We would know that that's opening it up to counterfeiting. But when they were trying to test the authenticity, they couldn't be. And that's why they had, by the way, remember the Sharpie gate, that they laughed at that. Actually, it was a minor thing, but it was true. Those were bleeding because they were using the wrong kind of paper. They were supposed to use paper that wouldn't bleed.
So let's talk about Fulton County and Georgia.
Fulton, yeah. I know you're especially tuned into Georgia. Well, of course, Garland Favorito, the magnificent guy.
Highly wonderful.
Right. And he really, he and his cyber experts really, they've been trying to get 147,000 Fulton County ballots since the election. And they never got their hands on the real thing, but they did finally get some low resolution copies.
Images.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that was enough to show massive problems. 4,000 hit identical to the split second timestamp. Now, how do you do that when it takes a second to scan a ballot? Okay, 16,000 had, by Georgia law, you got to have, when you scan a ballot, an image file and an authenticity file, an authentication file, I should say. And they're made simultaneously. It's sort of like a routing number on a check, the authentication file. And these are made by the scanner instantly, simultaneously. 16,000 had the authentication file dated days later, which is not possible. And then they had another 132,000, no authentication file in violation of the law. No way to show that. 354,000 with in-person ballots with no images at all. Well, you know, one thing that people overlook in Georgia, probably not you, but a lot of people overlook, they know that the rejection rate collapsed. Okay, you went from 2016 to 2020, and it was only 1/18 as much. Now you could,
of the absentee ballots rejected for bad signatures.
Correct. Or for any other defect, but mostly signatures, right. Now that you could attribute to that settlement they had between Raffensperger and the Democrats. Okay. I don't necessarily buy that, but you could accept that. How can you explain that when 62% are minorities, they're supposedly, according, not to me, but according to Democrats, marginalized citizens don't do paperwork that well. How does that happen that they did extraordinarily well? Virtually no rejection. Right. They, in other words, Fulton County probably swung most of the state with by letting everything flow through.
I mean, what you're talking about is that despite an enormous influence in the number of mailed ballots, people who voted by mail, the historic rejection rate plummeted, which shows that you're going along and you have a pattern of approximately the same, relatively the same percentage of votes that are rejected because of bad signature or otherwise failed to be authenticated. And now you have this massive increase in mail ballots, and the rejection rate, instead of going along at the normal percentage, it drops to virtually non-existent.
You know what it dropped to in Fulton County? If you compare it to the state rate 4 years earlier, Fulton County dropped to 1/128. That's nothing, in other words. It dropped.
It means that they were not validating the authenticity of the vote by mail ballots. What would you say are the things that you would say are the most important things to be done between now and 2024 in order that the same problems don't repeat themselves? Because I don't know if you've been following Carrie Lake's case in Maricopa County, but
disgraceful.
They basically, in 2022, did the same thing in Maricopa County. They did not match signatures.
Right.
Disgraceful. So what else would you say needs to be done?
I always ask people, when they ask me that, I said, well, it's going to depend on who, if the good guys or the bad guys are in control of the state. And good guys, I don't want to be too political, but that tends to be Republicans because they seem to believe more in integrity of the election.
Democrats, and the rule of law. The rule right, of law.
The Democrats say they want to make voting easier and more widespread. Okay, so I'm not going to judge that, but I'm just going to say, if the people who believe in integrity are in charge, it's not that hard. There's, obviously you want to make harvesting a felony, make sure it's a felony. Obviously you want ID. The first time somebody registers, they should have to show citizenship documents, which now maybe the Supreme Court will allow that. Since 2013, that's been forbidden. They need to track the ballots themselves all the way from the printer. I wrote an article on Jesse Morgan, the Pennsylvania truck driver who drove in ballots recently.
Right.
And I didn't even understand myself. When I read the so-called closing memorandum.
Right, which didn't close much.
And I can't believe that. How would they have the chutzpah to put in that the printer isn't sure if they sold 650,000 ballots and they got to Pennsylvania from New York. That's a New York printer. But they're not sure This what is happened? Like a year and a half after the incident. They're not sure if it was their trucks or they mailed it in Rochester. And the government says they're not sure. So nobody knows. It's like magically the ballots got from the printer to Pennsylvania. Well, I have a theory. Maybe they were in Jesse Morgan's truck. The second thing I would do is say, and this is probably really controversial, offer a $10,000 reward or something for any information leading to ballot harvesters, because it's usually a group activity. And somebody, one of the harvesters will squeal. Now, somebody is, I've had a couple of people tell me, well, that will be illegal. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it's worth trying.
I don't know. I think that would be a function of state law to know whether or not it would be. But look, I mean, I think that it is problematic when a state allows one person to return multiple ballots. And, you know, Pennsylvania's law, but we'll see what happens, that because the Republicans don't control the state legislature any longer. And so what you have now is a potential that they could change the law to make, and they have a Democratic governor. So, but, you know, but here's an example of what you're talking about. Even though it is illegal under current law and was illegal in 2020 and 2022 in Pennsylvania to return anyone's ballot except your own, just your own. And when people started watching the ballot drop boxes in Philadelphia with cameras to be able to record anyone who was putting in more than one ballot, the New York Times, well, first of all, the attorney general, who's now the governor, says he's going to threatens prosecution against anybody who is filming or photographing a drop box. Not saying, now remember, you can only return your own ballot, but goes after the people who are trying to record wrongdoing and get evidence of wrongdoing. And the New York Times started taking pictures of the people who were taking the photographs and attacking them. So that's the situation we find ourselves in.
There is a possible way around that. I tell people, okay, I know they're going to do that. And of course, they're very tiny body cams, but all right, that might still be a problem.
No, that's a good idea. James O'Keefe is big on people being citizen journalists.
Right. But here's a solution. If you have enough observers to man that ballot box for the entire time it's open. Now, some of them are 24 hours. Some of them are maybe 12 hours. Let's say it's a 12-hour box. You have somebody standing there keeping a tally of how many people visited the box. And let's say the box is emptied out every morning at 9 o'clock. So after 9 o'clock, you saw 92 people visited that box before it closed.
You ought to have 92 ballots.
Right. But then the chain of custody shows when they emptied the box the next morning, there were 562 ballots in there. You see, that would be some evidence. It's, I don't know if that could be a workaround for the camera problem, but.
You have to have election officials who care about enforcing the law.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, that was the biggest problem in 2020, certainly in Georgia, where there were so many areas of the law that were disregarded. And that happened in multiple states. The drop boxes that were set up in Wisconsin, the Supreme Court ruled had been illegal. An independent review of the Wisconsin election found that those drop boxes probably generated at least 20,000 to 25,000 votes for Joe Biden, and the margin in Wisconsin was roughly 20,000.
Yeah,
and you had nursing home problems in Wisconsin because they suspended the statute. I don't know how you suspend a statute, but the Wisconsin Election Commission suspended the statute that required special voting deputies, so you couldn't just go into a nursing home and collect ballots without a person of another party with you and designated. Anyway, there, and so you had 100% turnouts of nursing homes, including for memory care units. So it was lots of problems.
Lots of things. Well, here's one more real quick, if I can. This is Ward 124. 13, its turnout increased.
24 where?
In Madison, Wisconsin. And that's the Democrat. That's the increase in Madison Ward 124, 13 times the prior year, the prior election. And
what is that ward? What's that polling place? Is that on the University of Wisconsin?
That would be near where they had Democracy in the Park. I know you're familiar with that. And so right. that was a big, that, you know, think about that. Democracy in the Park, 206 drop boxes in a Democrat area, but each one had at least one special, like they made deputies, election deputies, to assist people, to be witnesses, to help them fill out the form, to even take it back, which sounded like harvesting, before the election. So that might explain this chart. That's what I'm trying to point out, that something's wrong. When you have, you know, it's unusual to have a doubling of turnout. Imagine having 13 times the turnout. It's ridiculous.
Well, and in fact, I don't know if you watched the documentary that Citizens United produced called Rigged, and Molly Hemingway's book, which is the same name, but they weren't produced together, also Rigged. But it really goes into detail about the use of the Zuckerberg money in Wisconsin and how it was used to really gin up the Democratic turnout. And it flowed through the election offices. So you literally had the election offices hiring people from these national left-wing groups to come in and have direct access to the voter files so they knew who voted in real time and ginned up the voter turnout.
Well, yesterday's news was really great. George Soros' son says he's pledging $1.5 billion for each election. So I guess we should be blessed if it's only $450 million.
Right. Half a billion was chump change compared to what's coming. But, well, Joe, how can people find your book? And do you have a blog? Do you have a website?
Substack. I don't know. But go to Substack and put in my name, Joe Fried. I also have my own website. They'll find it if they keyword search me. And the book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
And it's called Debunked with a question mark.
Correct. And in a couple of months, they should look for another book. It's going to be 23 problems and 23. I hesitate to say solutions because some of them it's hard to figure out a really good, but let's say recommendations for improvement. So that's
great.
Coming. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that in your retirement, you've decided to focus on what we need to do to save our elections, because that is how we save the country. So we appreciate that. We appreciate you. And people can find you at your website.
Yeah, my website. But the best thing is the Substack, because that's where I post the most frequently.
Okay. Well, it's great. Well, we love your book. We look forward to your next book. And we hope that you'll help all of our citizens groups around the country know what they need to be working on in order to prepare for next year.
And thank you. And I've been following you for quite a while. And thank you for all you do
for
election integrity.
Thank you so much, Joe. And with that, that's the end of this episode. We thank you all so much for joining us. We thank our guest, Joe Fried. And we ask you to share this episode and subscribe to our podcast. Visit our website at www.whoscounting.us. Download the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure. Learn what you can do in your local area to help save elections, because it's going to take all of us in order to make sure that the 2024 elections are fair, honest, and that we can trust the outcome. So with that, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast, and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.